Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 12th, 2024. There's a photograph on the front page with the headline, A Grand New Flag, and the caption, Colleen Hayes, a graphic designer with Champaign-based Clannon Creative, is shown in front of the design the agency submitted that is one of the 10 finalists in the state's contest for a new flag. Champaign's firm's design, one of 10 finalists in state contest. Next year, local designer firm Clannon Creative will mark its 10th anniversary. And while cakes and birthday parties are all very good, there may be no better way to celebrate than having its handwork potentially become the new symbol of the land of Lincoln. A design created by the firm, which is based in the Orpheum Theater building on the northern edge of downtown Champaign, is one of 10 finalists selected by the Illinois Flag Commission for its state flag redesign contest. Graphic designer Colleen Hayes, who served as lead designer on the flag, said it's an incredible honor to be in the running. We were just inspired by creating a flag that you would unite everyone in Illinois, no matter where they're from or what their background is, she said. Owner and director Scott Clannon added it was a shock given that state officials said nearly 5,000 designs were entered into the contest. Starting in January, members of the public will be able to vote for their favorite flag design at ilos.gov/stateflag, state officials said in an announcement Tuesday. As the saying goes, if you don't vote, you can't complain. Illinois Secretary of State Alexis Janulius, whose office convened the Flag Commission meeting, said in a video about the contest, "So make your voice heard and select the flag you think best embodies and celebrates our great state." The site includes the 10 finalist designs along with three other options, the current state flag, the 1918 centennial flag, or the 1968 sesquicentennial flag. Clannon Creative's design is identified as number 2246. After the public voting period, the commission will report its findings and recommendations to the Illinois General Assembly by April 1, 2025, whose members will vote on whether to adopt a new flag, return to a previous iteration of the flag, or retain the current flag, state officials said. Clannon said as a creative agency, his firm had followed news of the flag redesign closely. We spent a lot of time here internally with the design team, brainstorming many different designs, he said. I believe the rules were each Illinois citizen was allowed to submit three designs, so all our designers submitted three each. Yeah, we were shocked. The firm submitted 9 designs to the contest, he said. The design that made it into the top 10 was conceptualized by Hayes with collaborative input from the Clannon team, including Scott Clannon, Oscar Aguilar, Jess Johnston, and Jason Reitman, the agency said. All of these individuals are Illinois natives. Hayes wrote in her submission that her personal ties to the state run deep. My ancestors came from Ireland in the early 1900s and settled in Gridley, where they farmed corn and soybeans and raised livestock, she said. My father grew up on that same farm, while my mother was raised in Champaign. They met at Illinois State University, where I also earned my Bachelor of Arts in Graphic Design. I've lived in Illinois my entire life, and its agricultural landscapes and small-town values make me proud to call Illinois home. Clannon Creative's design features 21 green and white stripes, which represent Illinois' place as the 21st state in the Union, and also symbolizes its agricultural roots, the firm said. At the center is a rising sun, which is an homage to the current state flag and also symbolizes renewal. Three white six-pointed stars above this sun represent the state's northern, central, and southern regions, with their 18 points being a reference to the state's founding in 1818. The background of the flag is blue, symbolizing unity. We deeply respect the existing design and its connection to our shared history, Clannon said. It's familiar because it's all we've ever known. Yet, like fashion, architecture, and technology, the symbols that represent us should also evolve with the times. Our goal was to create a design that feels welcoming, modern, and inclusive, one that speaks to the Illinois of today and tomorrow. Why I Give, Jay Ramshaw. With our fifth annual Guide to Giving publishing Friday, we're continuing our mini-series of first-person stories by community members who go above and beyond in support of local nonprofits. Up today, Rosecrans board member and fan, Jay Ramshaw. I give so much to Rosecrans because it hits incredibly close to home. I've been in long-term recovery for over 20 years, and during my time as a student athlete playing football at the University of Illinois, I had to seek treatment outside of Champaign. At the time, there simply weren't local facilities that my doctors and family believed could provide the level of care I needed. That experience stuck with me, how hard it was to find the right resources, especially in a time of personal crisis. Fast forward to 2016, when I was fortunate to be on the board of Community Elements, and the opportunity came up to merge with Rosecrans, a best-in-class organization specializing in substance abuse and mental health care. I dove in headfirst. I toured their facilities, observed their treatment programs, and met with their leadership. What stood out to me was the incredible level of care they provide and their commitment to treating the whole person. It became clear that Champaign needed this kind of resource desperately. That merger brought something transformational to our community. An inpatient on Moreland Boulevard and a network of programs and facilities that I would proudly recommend to a family member or friend today. What drives me and what keeps me passionate after these years of serving on the board is Rosecrans's mission to serve everyone who needs help, whether or not they can afford it. Our CEO, Dave Gomel, is relentless in his dedication to that mission, and that energy is contagious. Every board member meeting centers on one thing, how many people we can serve with the highest standard of care. A moment that really cemented my commitment was when I met a young person in treatment at Rosecrans. They shared their story of feeling hopeless before they found help and how the programs there gave them a second chance at life. Seeing someone thrive because of the care Rosecrans provides is deeply motivating. It reminds me why I give my time and resources to this cause. I've been involved with Rosecrans for nearly a decade now, and I can honestly say it's one of the most meaningful parts of my life. It's not just about giving back, it's about creating opportunities for others to find hope and healing. Authorities making progress on probes into two homicides. Neither Champaign Police nor the Champaign County Sheriff's Office are ready to share updates about two separate homicides that occurred Monday and Tuesday nights in Champaign, but both say they are actively investigating. On Wednesday evening, Sheriff Dustin Huerman said progress had been made on his agency's investigation, but it is too early to make anything public. Champaign Police spokesman Joe Lamberson said Wednesday evening that he checked up on his department's investigation into the Monday shooting before the Champaign County Community Coalition meeting and also had no updates to share. Lamberson also said he hadn't been told of any reason to believe the two shootings are connected. We're obviously aware of the recent homicide Champaign Police are investigating, and we're taking everything into consideration. Sheriff's Lieutenant Kurt Apperson said of his agency. On Wednesday morning, Apperson referred to Sheriff's Office response as still ongoing with a very active investigation. The two homicides took place within 2 days and about 2 miles apart on the northeast side of Champaign, but details that have been made public set them apart. On Monday night, Champaign Police were called to a business on the 2400 block of West Springfield Avenue for a report of a shooting with injuries. They found a 21-year-old woman with multiple life-threatening gunshot wounds who later succumbed to her injuries at a hospital. Lamberson said, "It appears the woman was entering the business with a man when someone already inside opened fire, shooting at them through a window, which also caused property damage. The man was not hit. The shooter fled and police have not commented on a motive for the gunfire." On Tuesday night, sheriff's deputies responded to a reported shooting at a home in the 1500 block of Dobbins Drive, where the victim was pronounced dead at the scene. Huerman said Wednesday night that this is the second homicide his agency has investigated this year. Last night was a tough night for us, Huerman said at the Community Coalition meeting. I'm very limited on what I can say about that. However, any homicide is a tragedy, and we are working through that today. Tuesday's incident was the 7th report of shots fired that the sheriff's office has investigated this year, a significant decrease from the 13 reports investigated by this time in 2023. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Sunday's birthday celebration for Urbana High Hall of Famer Dave Cass Stevens saw more than 100 friends, family, and former Tigers stop by Brookdale Senior Living. From the bottom of my heart, I thank everyone for making my day special, Cass Stevens said. Coach, who turned 90 on December 2nd, was taken aback by the turnout that included the first two captains of his boys' basketball teams, who went on to play at big-time programs. 1974 graduate Russ Oliver at Baylor and 75 grad Ken Ferdinand at Illinois. It was wonderful and humbling, Cass Stevens said. The highlight was reconnecting with so many people I had known and coached over the years. This shouldn't have happened to him. Victim's family set up GoFundMe to help with funeral expenses. 33-year-old Keith G. Stone of Danville was a loving dad, son, brother, and uncle, says one of his seven sisters, Love Trail King. She said she's over all the gun violence, especially when it hits home so close to home. Families and communities have to deal with the grief. This shouldn't have happened to him, King said. He minded his own business and took care of this son. He was loved. Family and friends gathered for Stone's funeral Wednesday at the New Life Church of Faith in Danville. King has set up a GoFundMe to help pay for funeral expenses. King said they have by a certain day to pay Leek and Son's funeral home. Her brother didn't have life insurance. By Wednesday morning, about $1,300 has been raised of a $10,000 goal. She said any financial donation will help the family with unexpected loss. Stone was one of two shooting victims killed, the other a 17-year-old whose name hasn't been released, in a triple shooting on November 27th at a Danville East Main Street barbershop. A third person was injured in the shooting, and arrest in the killings hasn't been made. Danville Deputy Police Chief Terry McCord said there are no updates to release on the case. The department continues to be deep into the investigation, he said. Stone was a 2010 Danville High School graduate and an employee of Flexengate in Covington, Indiana. Stone's obituary reads, Keith enjoyed life and loved his family and friends. At an early age, he had a passion for music and football. He played youth football for the Tilton Panthers and continued on playing in high school and semi-pro, Southern Illinois Chiefs, and others. Keith, better known as Bud, has worked with youth camps and also gave a helping hand with the Danville Chargers. Bud decided a lot of his time with his sons, nieces, and nephews. King of Indianapolis says he was close with her brother, but they were both busy working all the time to keep in better contact. My brother was very outgoing. He was an avid swimmer, and he was a diver, she said. He loved football and helped assist with Little League football coaching. She said his death is a tragedy. If anyone can provide more information to assist with the shooting investigation, contact Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or anonymously to Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at vccrimestoppers.org, P3 Tips mobile app, or by calling 217-446-TIPS. Vermilion County Crime Stoppers offers rewards of up to $1,000 for information leading to arrests. Every little bit helps. Tipsters are always 100% anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers and receive a code number to check on rewards. All tips submitted to Crime Stoppers are electronically stripped of any personally identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service. The teacher of the week is Lori Miller, first grade, Gifford Grade School. Lori Miller has spent the last 31 years at Gifford Grade School turning her students into lifelong readers. The Rantoul native still lives in her home community and teaches at nearby Gifford Grade School, where she now teaches first grade, and she's found an important balance in her classroom. Simply put, it is fun being in Mrs. Miller's class, but she also expects a lot out of her students, Principal Heather Lindenmeyer said. She works tirelessly to ensure that her students grasp important foundational concepts and knows each individual student's needs so well. She is truly a model educator. I find my work important because I'm teaching first graders how to read and do math. The reading is especially important because the foundational skills they learn in first determines the reader they will be in the future. I want to get the kids to become lifelong readers. I became a teacher because I always enjoyed school as a child, and I wanted to work at something I love. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, we incubate and hatch chicks in the spring. The kids really love the whole process of setting the eggs, watching them hatch, and journaling about them. We even write letters to the chicks before they hatch to tell them what they expect in first grade. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when my first graders learn to read. It is so exciting to see them grow in their skills each day. I love seeing the light bulb go off and their enthusiasm for learning. They are excited to go to the library each week and try out new books that they can read. I keep students engaged by, I do a lot of songs, rhymes, and raps to help the students remember our content or transitions. A sense of humor helps too. Something else I'm passionate about is God, family, and music. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Mrs. Raver, my homeroom and social studies teacher in 8th grade at Ader Junior High in Rantoul. She was warm, always smiling, and made me feel special. My favorite subject in school was reading language arts. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a children's librarian. It would combine two things I love, children and books. And we have Mike Hale's column, Records and Radio. All We Want for Christmas is Mariah. Mariah Carey has returned to the top of the Billboard Hot 100 chart for the 6th of December in a row with her classic, All I Want for Christmas is You. Carey said she had absolutely no idea the impact that song would have when she wrote it in 1994. According to Forbes, she has collected $80 million so far just from this one song. When my daughter Jennifer was in middle school, this was her number one ringtone. What are the best-selling Christmas songs of all time worldwide? Coming up with a definitive list is next to impossible for myriad reasons. First, the list of recorded holiday radio favorites stretches to the 1930s. Looking back over 9 decades, the methodologies for tracking success have evolved numerous times. In the beginning, it was just counting the number of records sold. When jukeboxes were in almost every bar and eatery, Billboard and other tracking entities worldwide started counting the number of jukebox spins. The evolution of counting now includes digital download purchases, streams, and airplay audience impressions. Billboard's tally for Carey's song in just the last week includes 38 million streams and 24 million radio airplay audience impressions. And since the world has become enamored with vinyl again, I have no idea how much Christmas music is being pressed. It is projected that in 2024, the vinyl record industry will gross over $1 billion in sales for the first time in decades. The quiz question for today's column. Let's combine the power of Billboard, Guinness World Records, and International Federation of the Phonographic Industry. What are the best-selling Christmas songs of all time? The answer is below. 2 weeks ago, a reader asked what happened to Dave Dobbs, who was on WLRW in the mid-1970s. We quickly heard from Dave. Since your brief mention of me and my time at WLRW, my email, phone, and Facebook messaging have blown up, he said. Long story short, after being promoted to the morning drive spot, the commitments for evening promotional work, and having to be there at 5 a.m. to prep for the show during the week became a bit of a grind. I decided the time that I probably needed a degree to advance my career. So I gave my notice and went to SIU. After I graduated in 81, friends of mine and opportunities for me in Phoenix. Once there, I did some voiceover work, but while waiting for an on-air spot, a friend offered me a good position at a local bank. The next thing I know, my banking career took off, I met the love of my life, and a couple terrific kiddos, and life was 1,000 miles an hour. Almost 43 years after leaving WLRW, I retired from Wells Fargo about 2 years ago. I was financing large deals for heavy construction equipment and corporate aircraft. I was blessed with an amazing career. God has blessed me in a million ways, Mike, but I will never forget my years at WLRW, and I'm super grateful for the opportunities I was given, the places I was able to go, and the people I met. Crazy for a guy with no experience. Seriously, it was a terrific ride. Thanks for refreshing the memories. I'm about to run out of space, so next time, count on a couple more DJ follow-ups. Plus, at the suggestion of Dr. Grant Henry, we'll talk about the original 1450 WVON in Chicago. Questions, comments, column ideas, or stuff for me to research? Email me at mitm@whms.com or text 217-351-9797. I look forward to hearing from you. Finally, a big thank you to Sherry Myers and the family of Mike Kramer, a huge Beatles fan who passed away earlier this year. After my column about the sheer volume of material written about the Beatles since the early 60s, Myers invited me to look through his collection. You guessed it, 6 books I'd never seen before. Thanks to Sherry and Mike's family for their kindness. Nonprofit launches fundraiser for hazardous waste collection facility. When it comes time to dispose of unwanted paint or pesticides, most people don't want to drive more than 10 miles to complete the errand, said Susan Monty, founder and executive director of Champaign County Environmental Stewards. However, since the nearest collection facilities are in Naperville in the St. Louis area, that leaves Champaign County residents at a bit of a loss when it comes to properly disposing of household hazardous waste. Monty's agency is continuing to raise funds for a local collection facility to remedy this problem and held a media event Wednesday to kick off the public phase of the capital campaign. Monty, who is co-chairing the campaign, said the facility will serve all residents of Illinois. Realistically, that means everyone from East Central Illinois will likely use this facility, she said. Monty's group plans to build the 5,800 square foot facility on a 4.7 acre park at 901 Saline Court in Urbana. Funding sources include grants, local government funding, and individual donations. The nonprofit organization has raised $1.196 million to date, or about 42% of the estimated $2.85 million cost. Monty told the News Gazette another $1.654 million is needed to reach its goals. Once the necessary funding is secured, the project could potentially break ground in 2025, depending on when permits are acquired from both local authorities and the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, Monty said. Construction is estimated to take 1 year, and one preliminary projection shows that the facility could be open as early as April or May 2026. CCES officials said the facility is much needed, as the closest household hazardous waste collection facilities are about 2.5 to 3 hours away. As a result, household hazardous waste often ends up in landfills or sewer systems or on the ground where it can contaminate our water supply, cause medical problems and damage septic systems and infrastructure. The group said or is stored in homes where it endangers residents, pets, and first responders. Examples include certain cleaning products, pesticides, painting supplies, and fluorescent bulbs. When one of these items catch on fire, they emit very dangerous chemicals, said Champaign Fire Chief Andy Kornstrom. We think firefighters are invincible, he said, but the reality is we're not. Monty said in addition to temporarily storing the waste, the planned structure will accommodate the collection of residential electronics. The group also plans to collect unwanted paint and batteries there in the future. The $2.85 million project cost includes plans for a separate chemical storage building that can house batteries, as there are only a limited amount of lithium-ion batteries can be stored in the main building, Monty said. More information and a link to donate are available at ccenvstew.org/hhw-capital-campaign/. Alternatively, checks can be mailed to HHW Collection Facility, Post Office Box 1696, Champaign, 61824. Donors can also call the group's capital campaign team at 217-600-1516 to make other arrangements. Monty said donation incentives are available, and the organization is also seeking federal and state funds for the project. Katrina Olson, Marketing and Public Relations Co-Chair for the Capital Campaign, said that proper disposal is an issue that affects everyone. "I hope to have grandchildren someday, and I want to leave a better place for them," she said. "It really affects all of us. We all drink the water. We all live here on the earth. It's important. It's our responsibility. It's something we should all be concerned about." Mulvaney humbled and honored with naming of basketball court. 3 days after having the Armstrong Township High School basketball court named after him, Bill Mulvaney had his first public encounter with his new fame. While refereeing an Armstrong High School girls basketball game Monday night, another referee asked if he was the guy the court is now named after. Mulvaney told him, "Yep, that's me." Then they chuckled. "It's still a little strange," Mulvaney admitted of the recognition. On Friday night, Armstrong honored Mulvaney, a former teacher, coach, and administrator, before a home varsity boys basketball game. The new court in the Armstrong Gym is now named Bill Mulvaney Court. Mulvaney's wife, Carrie, was there to support him. They live in Gifford. His two daughters had previous engagements in which they couldn't attend. Many former students and ex-players also came to support Mulvaney on his court dedication night. What was Mulvaney's first thoughts when he heard about the naming dedication? "First of all, I was very surprised. I was very humble," he said. "I was honored to be by the fact that they felt they wanted to do something like that for me." He thought courts are named for people with much longer careers. Mulvaney coached for 11 years and is semi-retired after being a 20-year superintendent in Armstrong. He's currently interim superintendent with the Oakwood School District, in addition to being a realtor with the Littlefield Group at Keller Williams Realty in Champaign. He started as a history and physical education teacher and high school basketball coach in 1993 in Armstrong. He was athletic director the following year and also took over as baseball coach, in addition to coaching basketball and cross country. He served as football coach in 1997, with the co-op with Rossville Alvin. Through 2002, he mainly coached basketball and baseball. He also became principal in 2001 and later superintendent in 2003. He also continued coaching but gave it up when he focused on being a superintendent. Mulvaney was superintendent of Armstrong Ellis Grade School District 61 and Armstrong Township High School District 225. Mulvaney said the court dedication night was definitely a little bit surreal, but the court naming is starting to sink in. "When you spend the amount of hours and years in that gym I spent there, it just doesn't really hit home," he added. "It's nice you have a legacy like that. I was lucky enough to coach a lot of really great athletes." He said they had a lot of great teams through the years. He's thankful for the recognition of his time spent with the school district and community. "I appreciate it," Mulvaney said. We have Chuck Kaplinski's Week Screening Room column. Though it shamelessly cribs from numerous other action films, John Colicera's Carry On is surprisingly smart and entertaining. Inventive and fun, the script by T.J. Fixman and Michael Green contains one clever surprise after another, while not forgetting to inject some humor throughout. To be sure, it trips up a bit at the end when a couple of lapses in logic occur, yet it establishes so much goodwill by then that you'll likely forgive its faults. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 12, 2024. Please stay tuned for Part 2.